during the mid-February 2010 timeframe, 2nd Brigade Combat Team, 10th Mountain Division, targeting analyst, then specialist Joya W. Schoen, and others discussed a video that Ms. Sherman had found on the T-trap. The video depicted several individuals being engaged by an aerial weapons team. At first, I did not consider the video very special, as I had viewed countless other war-torn type videos depicting combat. However, the recorded audio comments by the aerial weapons team crew and the second engagement in the video of an unarmed Mongo truck troubled me. Ms. Sherman and a few other analysts and officers in the T-skit commented on the video and debated whether the crew violated the rules of engagement, or RG, in the second engagement. I shied away from this debate and instead conducted some research on the event. I wanted to learn what happened and whether there was any background to the events of the day that the event occurred, 12 July 2007. Using Google, I searched for the event by its date and general location. I found several news accounts involving two Reuters employees who were killed during the aerial weapons team's engagement. Another story explained that Reuters had requested for a copy of the video under the Freedom of Information Act, or FOIA. Reuters wanted to view the video in order to be able to understand what had happened and to improve their safety practices in combat zones. A spokesperson for Reuters was quoted saying that the video might help avoid the reoccurrence of the tragedy and believed there was a compelling need for the immediate release of the video. Despite the submission of the FOIA request, the news account explained that CENTCOM replied to Reuters stating that they did not give a time frame for considering the FOIA request and that the video might no longer exist. Another story I found, written a year later, said that even though Reuters was still pursuing the request, they still did not receive a formal response or written determination in accordance with FOIA. The fact that neither CENTCOM nor Multinational Forces of Iraq, or MNFI, would not voluntarily release the video troubled me further. It was clear to me that the event happened because the aerial weapons team mistakenly identified Reuters employees as a potential threat, and that the people in the Bongo truck were really attempting to assist the wounded. The people in the van were not a threat, but merely good Samaritans. The most alarming aspect of the video to me, however, was the seemingly delightful bloodlust the aerial weapons they appeared to have. They dehumanized the individuals they were engaging and seemed to not value human life by referring to them as, quote, dead bastards, unquote, and congratulating each other on the ability to kill in large numbers. At one point in the video, there's an individual on the ground attempting to crawl to safety. The individual is seriously wounded. Instead of calling for medical attention to the location, one of the aerial weapons team crew members verbally asked for the wounded person to pick up a weapon so that he can have a reason to engage. For me, this seems similar to a child torturing hands with a magnifying glass. While saddened by the aerial weapons team's crew's lack of concern about human life, I was disturbed by the response to the discovery of injured children at the scene. In the video, you can see that the Bongo truck driving up to assist the wounded individual. In response, the aerial weapons team crew, as soon as the individuals are a threat, they repeatedly request for authorization to fire on the Bongo truck, and once granted, they engage the vehicle at least 6 times. Shortly after the site engagement, a mechanized infantry unit arrives at the scene. Within minutes, the aerial weapons team crew learns that children are in the van, and despite the injuries, the crew exhibits no remorse. Instead, they downplay the significance of their actions, saying, quote, well, it's their fault for bringing their kids into a battle, unquote. The aerial weapons team crew members sound like they lack sympathy for the children or their parents. Later, in a particularly disturbing manner, the aerial weapons team crew verbalizes enjoyment at the sight of one of the ground vehicles driving over a body, or one of the bodies. As I continued my research, I found an article discussing a book, The Good Soldiers, written by Washington Post writer David Finkel. In Mr. Finkel's book, he writes about the aerial weapons team attack. As I read an online excerpt on Google Books, I followed Mr. Finkel's account of the event along with the video. I quickly realized that Mr. Finkel was quoting, I feel in verbatim, the audio communications of the aerial weapons team crew. Basically. clear to me that Mr. Finkel obtained access and a copy of the video during his tenure as an embedded journalist. I was aghast at Mr. Finkel's portrayal of the incident. Reading his account, one would believe the engagement was somehow justified as payback for an earlier attack that led to the death of a soldier. Mr. Finkel ends his account of the engagement by discussing how a soldier finds an individual still alive from the attack. He writes that the soldier finds him and sees him gesture with his two forefingers together, a common method in the Middle East to communicate that they are friendly. However, instead of assisting him, the soldier makes an obscene gesture, extending his middle finger. The individual apparently dies shortly thereafter. Reading this, I can only think of how this person was simply trying to help others, and then quickly finds he needs help as well. To make matters worse, in the last moments of his life, he continues to express his friendly intent, only to find himself receiving this well-known gesture of unfriendliness. For me, it's all a big mess, and I'm left wondering what these things mean and how it all fits together, and it burdens me emotionally. I saved a copy of the video on my workstation. I searched for and found the rules of engagement, annexes, and a flowchart from the 2007 time period, as well as an unclassified rules of engagement smart car from 2006. On 15 February 2010, I burned these documents onto the CDRW, the same time I burned the 10 Reykjavik 13 cable onto the CDRW. At the time, I placed the video and rules of engagement information onto my personal laptop in my chute. I plan to keep this information there until I redeployed in summer of 2010. I plan on providing this to the writer's office in London to assist them in preventing events such as this in the future. However, after the WLO published 10 Reykjavik 13, I altered my plans. I decided to provide a video and rules of engagement to them so that Reuters would have this information before I redeployed from Iraq. On about 21 February 2010, as described above, I used the WLO submission form and uploaded the documents. The WLO released the video on 5 April 2010. After the release, I was concerned about the impact of the video and how it would be perceived by the general public. I hoped that the public would be as alarmed as me about the conduct of the air weapons team crew members. I wanted the American public to know that not everyone in Iraq and Afghanistan were targets that needed to be neutralized, but rather people who were struggling to live in the pressure cooker environment of what we call asymmetric warfare. After the release, I was encouraged by a response in the media and general public who observed the Aero Weapons Team video. As I hoped, others were just as troubled, if not more troubled, than me by what they saw.